Hi, I'm Michael Sunoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. When my first child was born, he was very sick, and it was then that I knew I had to have a business that I could operate from home. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive. Hi, it's Michael Sinoff with Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called A Frank Talk About Money, what financial expert Robert Kiyosaki and his Buddhist nun sister taught each other about life. Not so long ago, people were taught to find good jobs and work hard so that someday they may enjoy a nice pension. But according to Robert Kiyosaki, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that's a dinosaur industrial age idea. And many people who are currently looking to others for money, whether it's the government, their pension plans, or even God, are getting a cruel wake-up call in today's economy. Tenzin, Robert's sister, is one of those people. As a Buddhist nun, she was only concerned with the simple life until she got cancer and heart disease. Faced with medical bills that her insurance wouldn't cover, she turned to her brother for help. They ended up learning valuable life lessons from each other that not only combined purpose with practicality, but also kindness with prosperity. And in this audio, you'll hear all about them. You'll also hear what Robert thinks of America's current economic condition, where he thinks we went wrong, and what he thinks we can do to fix it. You'll learn why it's dangerous to have a polarized right or wrong mentality, and how to develop a broader viewpoint. You'll learn how Tenzin and Robert ended up completely different life paths, how they found their purpose, and exactly what they learned from each other. You'll learn all about the man Robert considers his mentor, Buckminster Fuller, and what he learned that changed his life. You'll learn sound advice for those of us struggling in today's economy, and the crucial thing Robert says we need to learn. According to Robert and his sister, we are living in historical times, but it's important not to let yourself get paralyzed or depressed by your circumstances. Instead, look for the opportunities and awakenings, and in this audio, you'll learn how to do that.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Sinoff to bring you the world's best wellness-related interviews.
Thanks so much, Robert and Tenzin, for joining us today. Now, Robert, I'm interested in what you have to say about the current economic conditions in this country and what your take on that is.
Well, I think it's a tragedy that we've mismanaged our economy so horribly. It is my favorite subject, and the problem is, in my opinion, the relationship between the Federal Reserve Bank and the U.S. Treasury and their ability to create money out of thin air. And that's going to bring down this great country because they put us so greatly into debt. It's basically highway robbery, and I think it's a tragedy. The moment they turned the U.S. dollar from, in 1971, when Nixon took us off the gold standard, it was the end of America as we know it. It caused, 1971 caused the biggest economic boom. But now it's going to be the biggest economic bust ever. I think it's absolutely a tragedy. I think it's a tragedy our schools don't teach kids about money. I think it's a tragedy that it has to come to an emergency before we evolve. Auto workers in Detroit, you know, they just can't keep asking for more money and more benefits, but neither can the government workers keep asking for more money and more benefits without producing more, because capitalism is about producing a better product at a better price. So as individuals, we have to keep producing better products at better price also, or we're obsolete. So I just think that's one of the biggest tragedies of our time right now. This government's going to, last few years, last 50 years, is going to wipe out many, many people. Terrible. That's when I made my change with Dr. Fuller back in 1985, is I'm going to start teaching what my rich dad taught me about money. You know, sometimes your own family won't listen to you. And I'm glad my sister started to listen to me about money and the importance of it. Because being raised in a Christian family, you know, it was the love of money is the root of all evil. And, yada, yada, yada. So I kind of had to be a closet capitalist in my house, learn how to make money in spite of what my parents thought. It was extremely challenging because my mom and dad were with the Peace Corps, and I go to the Marine Corps, but they were also socialists, and my rich dad was a capitalist. That's why I put in the front of the book is you get to have two points of view and see both points of view. I can see being kind to people, but I don't think giving them money solves the problem. I think it makes the problem worse, and it prolongs the ultimate inevitable end anyway.
I wanted to ask you back to the economy, too. Do you see a way out of this? You know, I hear things like we're trillions of dollars in debt. Do you see any ray of hope?
I don't see it as good or bad, you see, because with this bad economy, I'm making more money than ever before because I've trained my mind to do that. Going back again to the quote, you know, you have to have two points of view. So I have two different strategies. In a bad economy, I'm playing the markets one way, and good economy, I play another way. So I'm always making money, but that's what I was trained to do. So I don't really see it as bad. Unfortunately, it's going to wipe people who are not prepared out. I hate to say this, but we might be cruising for another depression, and that's frightening. I think that it is a tragedy. And we can't just print money to get out of this problem. It doesn't solve the problem. Throughout history, every government that's printed money, the money has eventually gone to its ultimate value, which is zero. Remember, the Confederate dollar went to zero. The Continental went to zero. And that's what happens when you have a bank that's allowed to print as much money as it wants to. Hope is for the hopeless. I like to take action and get smart, and I don't trust my politicians. They're not bad people. I believe in taking care of myself and teaching other people who want to learn, but I don't believe in just printing money and giving money. I'm willing to teach those who are willing to learn.
In the front of your book, there's a remarkable quote by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
The test of first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. So, Robert, I wanted to ask you a little bit about what that quote means to you.
I thought it was a great quote because so many people operate in a world of right and wrong, and so they become polarized, like, you know, you're conservative or you're a liberal, and if you're one or the other, you can't be both. And I just think that this idea of right and wrong is kind of a damaging idea. One of my teachers, Buckminster Fuller, says we were given a right foot and a left foot, not a right foot and a wrong foot. And so the point is that there's always two points of view out there, and we need to increase our ability to, should we say, allow another point of view, then we have a better chance for peace.
Tenzin, what is your interpretation of that quote?
I think that it's a quote really helping us to expand and broaden our view and our attitudes at life, because we live in a global community now and we can't really remain isolated. You know, even in some of the smaller towns, there are people from other countries living with us now. And I believe that when we hold a very narrow view about our attitudes of politics or culture or religion, then we cut out the opportunity to really engage with other points of view.
Growing up, how did this affect you? Were you exposed to different points of views in your growing up? You talk a lot in your book about your childhood in Hawaii.
Absolutely. You know, my mother particularly became involved as the staff nurse for one of the Peace Corps training centers in Hawaii, one of the largest in the United States. And so we were working with people from all over Asia, learning about their food, their culture, their language. And both my parents really encouraged us to engage with people of other cultures. And, you know, even around food, she said, you know, one way that you can just create harmony with others is to enjoy their food.
Now, the other quote that I just found to be a wonderful quote in the beginning of your book is from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and it is, "My religion is simple, my religion is kindness." Tenzin, can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Working as a hospice chaplain, I'm finding that I pull in and work with people from so many different cultures and faiths. And essentially what people respond to is kindness. Although we were both raised as Christians and I became a Buddhist nun, there's the meeting of the heart rather than anything else. And so we work on that level in hospice and just paying attention to what are the person's needs. And that and dealing with other aspects of our business, we really respond to kindness. And I think that transcends religion. It transcends different points of view.
Now, Robert, what do you say about that?
I would say it's one of the toughest lessons I personally had to learn, kindness. I grew up playing football and hunting and went to military school and then into the Marine Corps. And kindness is not a valued rate. So as I grow older, I'm finding that it's something I definitely need to put focus on, you know, thought and practice. And kindness actually comes from the heart, so it really starts from inside of me. It's been quite a magical journey for me to learn to be kinder in my dealing with other people. And I would say that's one of the biggest benefits for me personally in writing this book with my sister, was learning to be a little kinder, a little bit more patient person, because my whole upbringing, you know, like I say, from playing football all the way through the Marine Corps, was not about kindness. It was almost the exact opposite.
That really comes through, that each of you have really developed very differently. Now, how do you explain that, coming from the same family? How did you turn out with such different views of the world?
I think that a big reason why we struck out in different ways is the attitude of our parents to just try what we wanted. And they did not impose upon us very strict regimens of how they wanted us to be. And so we took full advantage of that and really struck out on our own.
I don't know why I am internally a violent person. I don't mean I'm physically violent, but I don't think the normal nerve endings most people do, which was very good for me as a pilot in Vietnam, because when most people are afraid, I'm actually quite excited about things. Even today, you know, I go big game hunting and all this, and the more dangerous something is, the happier I am. And possibly that's what makes me an entrepreneur, because I thrive on the adrenaline of excitement and danger, and I just cannot stand boredom on the other side of it. So I've really had to, in writing this book, make a tremendous change of heart, especially as I get older, because I couldn't just keep up my normal ways. I just grew up that way. I don't know why, because my parents were not that way. Why am I a person who loves guns? I have no idea. Why do I like to go hunting? I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. Why does somebody love golf? That doesn't make sense to me either. We have different interests and different likes and dislikes.
One thing you talk about in the book, Robert, is Buckminster Fuller was one of your extremely important mentors in your life. Can you kind of tell our listeners a little bit about that whole experience?
Well, Bucky Fuller is considered one of the most accomplished Americans in history. He has more patents after his name, and Harvard considers him one of the greatest graduates, and American Institute of Architects consider the greatest architect. But they called him the world's friendly genius, and John Denver was inspired by him, and he called him the grandfather of the future. When I met Bucky, I was totally into capitalism and making money and all this, and one day I was up in Kirkwood, California, right above Lake Tahoe, and he asked me what my life's purpose was. It was probably 100 people there. And he asked me, "What's your purpose, young man?" And I said, "To get rich." And in front of these 100 people, he scolded me publicly. And he says, "Get rich, get rich. What a waste of a good mind. Why don't you do something with your life?" But I think what he was trying to say to me was what my parents were trying to say to me, was what I think war was teaching me. And it was to maybe make a change in direction of my life. So that was back in 1981. And my life took a whole completely different path after that. You know, instead of being just a capitalist with factories in Taiwan and Korea and Hawaii, I suddenly had to ask myself, what's my purpose in life? You know, am I just here to make money? And after he scolded me, then I was in turmoil, because I did find that emptiness a lot of people talk about. Is it just the money? Is this all there is? Is this a bigger house and nicer cars? And that's what he gave to me. And so finally, back in 1984, after 3 years of studying him, I said, I'm going to find out what my life's purpose is. And that's what Rich Brother, Rich Sister is about, because in 1985, my wife Kim and I took a leap of faith. And instead of just making money for me, I wanted to find out what I was supposed to do with my life. And that's when I ran back into my sister, Tenzin. And in 1985, she became an ordained nun by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So I become a teacher, something I swore I'd never become. And I see her as a nun. And if you had seen us back in high school, there's no way you would have ever said I would ever become an author or a teacher, because I was a horrible student. And there was no way my sister was going to be a nun. So that's a lot of what this book is about, is, you know, the leap of faith to find out what your purpose in life is. And I'm actually a lot happier because I work as a teacher now more than just a capitalist making money for myself. Making money has always been pretty easy for me, but today I don't need any more money, but I still work because, you know, money is important, but my work is more important than the money now. And that's a very big difference. And I just work because I enjoy my work.
Well, I can tell my side on how the book came about for me, too. I had been living a very simple life, studying as a monastic, praying, meditating, really plumbing the depths of our inner riches. And I was ignoring the basic needs of my physical life and really thinking that if I lived my life well, then everything would be fine. So I just was broadsided when I was diagnosed with cancer and later with heart disease, particularly with heart disease, because my insurance didn't want to cover most of my bill. So my out-of-pocket expenses were huge. And this is one reason why Robert and I began looking at this condition, because it doesn't affect just myself, but really looking at the baby boomers who are aging and we're getting older, life's getting on, and our health bills are only going to increase. So even though I was living this wonderful life, you know, I got hit with mortality issues and big bills and realized that living in LA was not heaven and I had some basic needs to take care of. Plus the insurance companies were knocking on my door. So this was a big wake-up call for me.
For more interviews on health, mind, body, and spirit, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
How was it having a brother that you knew was so wealthy?
You know, I've been attending Robert's seminars over the years, and I find that Robert is more of a mentor to me as I go through my life, because one of Robert's talents is that he's able to distill some of these concepts about finance into more simple terms. And for Robert to teach me, he has to keep distilling it down to very elementary monopoly kind of issues so that I can grasp what he's talking about, because I was really ignoring the financial aspect of my life. So reaching out to Robert, he was really helping me stretch my understanding, because I was one of these people who was really waiting, you know, like for my center or living a good life as a monastic, that would take care of me, or these people who expect that the government's going to pay their retirement later on. So, you know, when I became a nun, I didn't sign up for a pension plan as a monastic, and somehow I was just ignoring the side of taking care of the financial needs. So I'm learning a lot from Robert, and in this way, we came up with this idea of the book so that it could help balance this polarized view. Now, if you don't pay attention to one side of the balance sheet, it's going to go out of balance. You know, I'd always been struggling as a single parent, and it was really Robert who came up with the idea of, why don't we write this book? Because it'll be an interesting way for myself to make some passive income, but to share our story and to perhaps and hopefully help others with their own dilemma.
And so that's how Rich Brother, Rich Sister came to be?
What was happening was I was writing checks, and I bought her a home and all this, but it goes against my total belief. I don't believe in giving people money. You know, from Sunday school, as you teach a man to fish, you feed him for life, but you give him a fish, you feed him for a day. So to sit here and just write checks, I said, look, I'd be willing to share with you what I know, because my sister has a very valuable gift to give and a very powerful message, being a Western Buddhist nun. So I said, I will teach you what I know, but you've got to play the rules of my game, capital. And that was how we came up with this, because I said, I'm not going to sit here and just keep writing checks. You know, I'm not God or I'm not the government. It was against everything I believe. So I teach people to fish, and that's what I'm doing with my sister.
And I'm learning that praying and meditating isn't going to pay my bill. It has been a very interesting lesson, and one that I am turning my life around now to share with others. It's a big leap, again, you know, to show that I had this flaw with my head in the sand about this, but it really is about balancing out our lives.
Have you learned a lot about the medical system in this country through your experience?
I'm learning more. What happened with the cancer, that happened in 1998, was that friends took care of me. And because friends took care of me, I remained ignorant about finances. I thought I'd always be taken care of. But when the heart disease hit, that was 2 years ago, I did have some insurance, really bad insurance, and my out-of-pocket expenses just for that were over $22,000 last year. That's a big wake-up call when you look at how you're going to pay this. You know, it's not something that's small change for someone like me. And so I've been realizing that there's so many people, not only in my own community, but people in general who think that the government is going to take care of them or finding jobs that are just going to give them a good pension. And what's happening with our economy today is that it may not be able to follow through and take care of a padded life for the rest of your life.
I don't need the insurance. I have insurance. But what I spend my money on is health. You know, there's an old Irish proverb that goes, if I knew where I was going to die, I wouldn't go there. And I suspect I'm going to die in a hospital every time I go past when I drive really quickly. So I spend a lot of money on health, gyms. I go to naturopaths, acupuncturists, anybody else who's almost the alternative to medicine. Because I think by the time you need medicine, it's too late. That's my belief. So I have the money to pay for the best, should I say, natural health care or preventative health care. I'm carrying vitamins around, and like I said, I go see my acupuncturist, and I go to hyperbaric chambers. You know, those things cost money, but I'd rather protect my health than let the doctors take care of me. The purpose of this book is to kind of answer that question, is what am I here on earth to do? Am I living the life I was born to lead? And what's my purpose in life? The same question that Bucky Fuller asked me back in 1981, what's your purpose on earth? And I think that's a very important question because it puts meaning into life other than just, you know, eating, drinking, and sucking air down, is what can we give back to the planet? And that was a question that Fuller asked me back in 81. And it took me a long time to figure it out. I said, you know, I know how to make money. That's what I know. Not too many people know that well. So I just started to give what I was given. And that's when my life turned around. And the same as my sister, to take the leap of faith in 1985 and to go from what I call an ordinary private citizen to all of a sudden this nun with a shaved head and robes and all this, that is a leap of faith. So the book is about really seeking your purpose in life. And I think that once you find that, that's the spirit coming out. Like, I would not be well known if I had just used my gift to make money for me. But the moment I started to teach others, you know, you teach people to fish. I think that's why my book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, became an international bestseller and things like this, because I was simply giving my gift. And my sister is simply sharing her gift, which is her knowledge of the Buddhist philosophy. That's why we get together, is to give more. And that's what I think life's about. And I think there's just too much greed in the world today. I think that's why we have problems. We got together with this book here so I can support my sister, giving her gift also. She works in a hospice, and she worked with dying one-on-one. But I said, your gift has to be given to the world. And the more you leverage your gift, then the universe, you know, give and you shall receive.
Yes, and Robert's taught me a lot about, if I only think on this small level, then it's true, I can only help one person individually. And in expanding my gift, I can share so much more of all that I've been learning. And this way, too, it's really about balancing our lives and looking at personal balance sheets in our lives. I'm having to expand my thinking, and this is what we need to get, is expand our thinking and see how in this difficult economy, what we put into our mind and our thoughts can raise us or depress us. Because the mind is so powerful, you know, we have to check our thinking and we have to really look at balancing this out. Because if we don't pay attention to one side, it's going to knock us over.
And how did you come to find your gifts, Tenzin?
Well, I just kept checking and looking at what I wanted in life and what I wanted to study, and I became very excited with the Buddhist teachings. And now that I've been a monastic for almost 24 years and been called upon to teach more and more, I can't just hide in that. You know, I can't hide in not teaching. So it's been a real stretch and putting myself out there, learning a lot, working as the chaplain at the Air Force Academy when I was in Colorado. It was very odd to be a Buddhist monk defense contractor. Now, it's very congruent for me working in hospice because I'm learning at the same time as deepening my own practice. But writing the book has stretched me beyond just helping a few individuals into understanding the financial world and where I was imbalanced, to get my head out of the sand and to infuse more meaning into my life.
And what do you hope that people get from Rich Brother, Rich Sister?
I hope that they too can look at taking stock of their life now, noticing, because we become very passive and reticent in our lives, to see that they are challenging themselves today and always, you know, looking to see. Because even though I became a nun and I took my leap of faith some time ago, it's something that you need to keep checking in on, because I can still be lacking intensity or life, being a couch potato in my own life and just accepting it as it is. So, you know, it's really challenging myself to look at meaning continually. I've learned so much from the Dalai Lama, even from a distance. I've worked somewhat closely with him in the past, but even his view of his own studies, you know, he is so willing to test things and try them on, work with scientists, work with cutting-edge physicians who are learning about new technology and questioning his own belief systems. And I love that sense of inquisitiveness and willingness to change. And as he does that, then he gets more confirmation on what does work for him, and he's willing to throw out other things. You know, regarding women, because Buddhism and Buddhist monasticism can be very patriarchal in its way too, and he says women need to take every opportunity they can. And don't let others hold them back. You know, this is your opportunity. So I feel, as a Western monastic particularly, I don't have to be riveted down by old traditional mores. And truly, the Dalai Lama has expressed that in his own life too. The way he transforms difficulty into things of awakening. You know, he says that losing his country, living in exile, has made him a true person, rather than sitting on a throne somewhere in a dusty palace, really changed his life when he got thrown out into the world.
So the difficulty was a gift.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Yeah, transforming difficulties and putting them into practice. So how do you take it to your advantage?
Lots of people out there now that are struggling with their health, they're struggling with their financial challenges. What can you offer them?
One thing that the Dalai Lama says, which I think is really beautiful, is that in order to develop compassion for others, you have to have compassion for yourself. You must start there. And I think that's a really beautiful example, because sometimes, you know, we forget about ourselves, or sometimes we only think about ourselves and forget about others, and we just become too selfish. So he says, compassion for others must start with compassion for oneself.
Now, Tenzin, it sounds like your whole idea about money has evolved quite a bit through writing Rich Brother, Rich Sister.
Yes, it has. And I realized that I had surrounded myself with people with my same belief systems. And that's what we tend to do, is we tend to surround ourselves with people of like mind. And I felt that I was doing fine, you know, but when I interviewed or just asked some of the monastics around me, now not just Buddhists, but also Catholic and other monastic or other renunciates, they feel that somehow they'll be taken care of. And I think, especially with the economy changing the way it is, that even churches and temples are going to be challenged in this economic time, because the gifts to these places are coming from the kindness of others. And if they too are challenged, you know, I think that nonprofits and monastic orders are also going to be challenged. So, you know, it's like with people wanting the government or pension plans or God to give us money, we've really got to change our view. And so it's a wake-up call, but it's also a slow process, because I've been habituated to think a certain way. So it's really wonderful to change who I hang out with. It's our government too, you know, a lot of people that are just waiting for Social Security to kick in, but baby boomers are hitting at, what, 10,000 a day of Social Security age, and there are not that many people putting in towards their retirement. I think we all need to look at self-sufficiency a lot more, and that's a huge change of view. You know, I see for myself that I had been steeped in it for a long, long time. And to begin to help myself, I have to start looking differently. So going back to work at age 60 was one thing, getting a better healthcare plan was another. Writing this book was a huge stretch from my familiar, safe, secure world into something of being with the public and sharing my story, hoping that, you know, it'll help others wake up as well.
And how wonderful that you did write it. I mean, it is a very inspiring book. Yeah, I think people will take a lot from it. Which brings me to another question for you, Robert, which personally, I'm still working on this one. Came across the word ephemeralization. Can you kind of explain that?
Ephemeralization means the ability to do everything with nothing or leverage or doing more with less. And what Dr. Fuller said was nature was ephemeralizing constantly, always doing more and more with less and less. And that's why it goes against the labor union idea of doing less and less for more and more money. So as a businessman, I'm constantly ephemeralizing, you know, figuring out how I can do more and more for less and less. So, example, I set up a franchise system where people can come and learn financial education for free. And then my task is, now, how can I learn to make money from that by first giving away first? So I'm always constantly looking at how I can do more and more for less and less. You look at Apple computers, they give you a better and better computer for less and less price. You look at what the Indians are doing now with cars from India. Tata Motors is producing cars for $2,500. And, you know, that's more than the health care costs inside of a GM car. So the reason GM is in trouble is the Indians ephemeralized, but the U.S. didn't. So those are some of the big reasons that word ephemeralization, or doing more with less, is such a crucial, crucial principle to learn, especially if you're going to be in business in this rapidly changing world today. Like, you look at the world of books that I'm in right now, people just download books. They don't go to a bookstore. Amazon is wiping out Borders and Barnes & Noble. Those are all examples of ephemeralization, doing more with less at a better price. And the companies that are firing their employees, the reason is because they didn't ephemeralize. They're not demanding that the company produce more for less. So in my company, we've paid bonuses this year. We've given time off. The reason is, as the owner of the company, I'm always focusing on how my company can do more for less. And it's one of the principles of the world. I think you'll understand it when you look at, you know, when the iPhone came out, it was X dollars, and immediately the price went down. Performance goes up. You know, 200 years ago, we had to walk or ride a horse. Now we climb on a plane and fly. Now we can go on the web. I mean, I did a seminar in South Africa a month ago, but I did it from Phoenix. I didn't have to get on a plane and fly for 3 days to Johannesburg. I just stood in my little office in Phoenix, and they beamed me up 30 feet inside this room, and there was, I think, 2,000 people or something. So I made as much money, but it cost me a lot less wear and tear. So the people who are getting ahead are people who are ephemeralizing, you know, financially. And the people that are dying are people who still expect to get paid more to do less. That's the big disconnect right now. It's evolution. Right now, the technological world plus God or spirituality is evolving. I think America has become a little bit too corrupt. Government's a little too corrupt, too greedy. Many corporations are too greedy. Labor unions are too greedy. And that affects charities and religious organizations. I just think it's greed. And that's why in 1985, I had to figure out how to give before I received. The more I focus on giving for less and less, the more and more I make.
And have you found that to be true also, Tenzin?
I am finding that out. And as I work with this book, as I work with others, I am finding more ease and ways of working with this myself.
Like, you know, we were talking about, because my father was a university professor, and his thing was tenure. And every time I hear a university professor say tenure, I hear the word dinosaur. Because you're supposed to not be getting tenure. You're supposed to be figuring out how you can teach more students at a better price and more effectively. That's your job. But all these guys who want, you know, I'm going to join the police department so I can get 20 years and then I can retire, those are industrial age ideas. Information age ideas, you just be, well, how can I serve more people at a better price? And that's what I'm saying, you know, is this economy bad? Well, it goes back to Fitzgerald's saying again, there's different points of view. To me, this is a great economy. If you wanted to buy a house, now is the time, even in Santa Barbara. Everything's coming down in price, which is wonderful. I don't know why people are crying.
Yes, and this is where the spirituality kicks in too, where we have to gain clarity in our own mind, because we are living through a very difficult historical time. And to watch that we don't get paralyzed or depressed by it, and see what we can do to find other avenues of working with what's happening.
I don't think it's a difficult time. I just think it's a changing time. Change with it is the most exciting thing you can do. So it's all perception. There is more opportunity now at easier and better prices than ever before. You know, like I have businesses in probably 50 countries throughout the world, and it's never been easier to do business throughout the world. Never. I don't know what people are complaining about. But if you can't see it, you can't see it because you've been trained to think of, I'm going to work for the university system and stay there until I get tenure. That was my dad, whereas my rich dad was exactly the opposite thinker. So I had two dads, two points of view, and I chose to listen to my rich dad.
What Robert keeps teaching us is to change our point of view and raise our sights and look at opportunity.
You look at it this year, you know, the stock market's down 40% from last year. That's the stock market having a sale, offering 40% off. I don't understand why people are complaining. I'm buying more than ever now. I say, oh, this is good. Stock market's on sale. Real estate's on
right.
sale. But people see it as bad. I think it was appropriate. She asked me that opening question about what quote I chose for this book was the ability to see two opposing points of view and operate sanely between them.
So what's next with Rich Brother, Rich Sister? Do you have another project in the works, or what do you see in the future?
I think my sister should write what she really knows about, which is karma. She should have a book on that. She has a book on nirvana, past lives, and, you know, things that she's really studied. And I think her advantage is she's a Western Asian woman who is studying an ancient Buddhist or Asian religion. So she's a very good translator for the West. I'm writing a book called Rich Health, and it's East and West medicine coming out because my cardiologist, he started off as an acupuncturist, and now he's a heart transplant surgeon for male. And without him, I don't know if I could survive. I went through open heart surgery because I was born with a heart defect. And because of him, I came through the operation in flying colors. But I think if I'd gone through a traditional cardiologist, I might not have made it. But my cardiologist, who started off, like I say, as an acupuncturist and iridologist, you know, for the eyes and all this, he comes from a completely different point of view on medicine. So that's one of my most exciting projects is Rich Health.
What else can you tell us about Rich Brother, Rich Sister?
I did it personally because my sister has taught me a lot about being kinder. That was her saying, you know, His Holiness's religion is kindness. And I think we could all use a little bit more of that.
And for myself, you know, it's about being tougher and speaking up more and jumping into the game more. So that's been another lesson for me. And it's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, it was just a delight to talk with you both and just wonderful to see inspiration and education you both brought to people that desperately need it in this world. Thank you so much.
That's the end of our interview, and I hope you've enjoyed it. For more great health-related interviews, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.